They don't give me a gavel, so all right, thank you. We'll get going today. As the council might have noticed on our agenda, we're trying to better manage our meeting with some time slots, so hopefully our presenters are able to work with us on that. So first up, we have the RPU department update for the year. Mark?
Yes. As I mentioned to a few of you, I've got about 10 minutes, so somebody can have my additional 10 minutes if they need it, but I'm open for questions if there are any. In the packet, again, this year I included a brief summary of how we ended the year financially in 2016 and where we stand year-to-date in 2017. Just a couple of things to call out in terms of 2016 year-end results. Our revenue forecast was almost on budget for electric and a little above budget on the water side. The majority of our net position increase over budget was attributed on the electric to a reduction, about a 4% reduction in our operating expenses in 2016, and then a contribution in aid of construction for a new substation that was about $3 million. Those net position dollars are then rolled back into the utilities capital funds to use for capital projects, and also to fund our cash reserves. We're on target at the end of 2016 to meet our cost of service study reserve targets. As you may recall, about 3 years ago, the board and the council approved transitioning to what's called the utility basis of rate setting, which means we start building cash reserves for the future replacement of aging assets so those don't become unfunded liabilities in the future. So we're working towards those targets over the next 5 years, and we're on track to meet those targets going forward. The water utility did a little better than budget, but we still are, again, we transitioned to the utility basis in the water utility last year and are working towards maintaining and building those cash reserves for the replacement of aging water infrastructure, mainly water main distribution system piping within the city. I want to highlight just a couple of the major 2016 highlights. One of the biggest ones is probably the completion of the CapEx 2020 high voltage transmission line. That project was completed September of last year. That results in the city now having a secure high voltage transmission source, which we project to take us out to approximately 2050. So that's a major milestone for the city in terms of reliable transmission service for the city. We also started construction on the new 47 megawatts Westside Energy Station. That's a $75 million generation station. It runs on natural gas. It's what's referred to in the industry as a peaking plant. So it will be dispatched by MISO, our regional grid operator, when energy prices and demand are needed for that plant. It's the new technology that is coming into play today to work with the renewables. As more and more renewable energy comes on the grid, these fast-starting natural gas, highly efficient natural gas plants are what are needed to take the swings from the renewables. So we are well positioned to play in the market as more renewables come online and this plant gets dispatched to support those. The other big item that we have going at RPU is changing our customer care or our billing system. We began the implementation of that last year, and we're working on the integration and implementation of that this year. That is a major undertaking to revamp our customer care system, provide more optionality for our customers in terms of how we communicate with them, more information about their bills, and a platform to roll out an automated work management system for all of the field work that goes on with the customer requests. And last but not least, we began design and started construction and then completed construction this spring on a new high voltage substation to serve Epic, the medical records contractor for the Mayo Clinic. It's a new data center, or a data center that they took over from the clinic, but there's plans to build additional data centers out there. This substation will provide them a very reliable, redundant energy source for the existing data center and their future data center should they come to pass. Year to date, we are ahead of budget. Year to date, slightly below on revenues, but those are offset by a reduction in operating expenses, about 75% or more of our operating expenses are our wholesale power supply. So as our revenue or our retail sales are below budget, our expenses for the power for those retail sales also follow below budget. So one kind of offsets the other. But we are ahead of budget by about $3 million on net position year to date through May. And again, part of that $1.6 million is a contribution to NADA construction for that new substation that was built for EPIC. On the water utility, we're doing well. We're about on budget. And we project both the water and electric utility cash reserves are on target of where we would like them to be according to budget. A couple of things that have been done so far this year to note is we did complete the bond sale for the Westside Energy Station and the building expansion we have planned out at the RPU Service Center. That was, and some refinancing of about $20 million in old bonds to save on interest rate costs. That was a large bond issue. It's largest that we have in the history of RPU. That was a $125 million bond sale that successfully went through. We maintained our AA rating with the rating agencies, and part of that is our strong financial position which helped us do that. We did develop and roll out a community solar offering already this year. We've had a couple kickoff meetings for that, continue to advertise that. So that is, for those of you that don't know, that is the ability of residential customers that either don't have the opportunity to put solar on their roof or don't want to put solar on their roof, they can buy the output of panels from a large utility-grade community solar garden at probably better prices than they could put one on their roof for. So we're hoping to continue to advertise and market that as an option for those that would like renewable energy as part of their supply for their residents. And two other items we've got on the books yet this year is we really want to get working on development of a long-range water main replacement plan to go along with the utility basis of rate setting and acquiring reserves to pay for replacement. We want to come up with a coordinated replacement plan that lays out a 20 to 30 year timeline of how many miles of main that we want to replace every year and the associated dollars with that. So we've been working on that this year. And then we are right now in the middle of a cost of service study for the electric utility. It was 3 years ago that we did the last one, and so now it's time to redo that, take a look at what we've got coming down the pipe for costs and revenues, and what rate adjustments, if any, we may need to see coming in 2018 and beyond. So we get the first look at that cost of service study at the July utility board meeting, and then the board will supply recommendations to the rate consultant. Then eventually that will work its way through our budget process and come to the council for final approval in probably the November timeframe. So I will keep you updated as we work through that cost of service study. That's all I've got. I'm open for questions.
Mr. Ruska?
Mark, just a really good report of a lot of substantial initiatives that you've taken on and accomplished and are continuing to move some additional ones forward. So, you know, this is... my eyes, just a great report. A lot of big numbers being thrown out around there with all the different things that are being done, but they're good, solid plans for us into the future. So I appreciate it. It looks really good. Just on a side note, that you talked about the community solar offering. How's that being received in the community? I know I've had some people asking about it, and they had some interest in it, but then there's also kind of a upfront and, you know, investment.
Yes.
Are you starting to kind of say you have a number kind of goal, and how are you coming along as...
We're behind where we'd like to be. We have very limited interest at this point, so we need to take a look at ramping up our marketing and making more opportunities for folks to be aware of it and to understand it.
Yeah. Okay. We've got Mr. Hickey, then Mr. Camp.
Yeah, that was basically my question, but thanks for the report. And yeah, I think that community solar is just a really innovative approach to it. And yeah, I'll be curious to see how that shakes out after a little bit more marketing. I think it's a great idea.
Thank you.
Mr. Campion.
I was going to call the report spotless, so it's nice to see everything laid out there so we can consume it really easily. The one thing I will say is I was running through the numbers for my family and for our electric bill. I was wondering if part of the effort to get more interest wouldn't be an ROI calculator for this for people.
Sure.
I'm interested in it enough to go out and figure out how to do all the calculations myself. I think a way to drive some of that interest would be put in your regular household electricity bill, put in how all these different pieces play out, and then figure out what your capitalization would be and what you'd receive in terms of benefit. Because I think for some families that might have the available capital, that will make a lot of sense. But other than that, I'm really excited to see the initiative move forward. I was hoping to get involved one way or the other, but I think it is really a positive step for our community, an interesting option that's out there for people that might be waffling on whether an permanent installation to their house makes sense, kind of a step in that direction.
Yeah. Mr. Hickey?
Yeah, so just, I mean, when we talked about it last time, at what, 10 plus cents a kilowatt hour, it's about a break even over the life?
Yes, so on average, you could probably say most customers will break even over the life of the term of that contract.
Yeah. If there's no adjustment, right?
Right.
Yeah.
All right. Mr. Woodruff?
So I have an ROI calculator because I got asked that question a lot, so let me know, I'll get it to you.
Perfect.
But what I would say is that this is a, this isn't, my understanding from the board discussions, the intention of this is not as a financial product, but as an opportunity for people who can't otherwise have solar to get solar. There may be better financial opportunities out there now or in the future, but the biggest thing that makes it more of a break even is the fact that the ownership of the output is at 12 years, is that correct?
Yes.
And the panels are going to output for 35 years, but you're paying for 12 of them, and that's what's going to that's what makes it a little bit more of a it's an option that was not otherwise there, so it's very good from that standpoint. ROI, find yourself a good dividend yield fund.
We'll figure it out. Yes, I will tell you that a couple things. One is we fully intend to offer something past 2030 to continue this program. This is tied to the SIMPA contract because SIMPA owns the utility-grade solar farm that these are coming from. Once that contract is over in 2030, we will follow up with an additional offering. It could be a better price depending on prices of solar where they are in 12 years. The other thing is we are looking at making this available potentially to commercial customers. Hmm. There. So that may be another marketing or another target group that may be interested. If they want to do some sustainability as part of their business model, this gives them an opportunity. So we wanted the residential class to have first shot at the available panels. If they don't completely fill out, which I don't think they will, we intend to probably open up something for the commercial customer to help sell out.
Well, it's good that you had all the questions on it. That shows that people are interested in it. So.
And also, I did pass out a brochure that goes into a lot more detail on what went on last year. We had an annual employee recognition breakfast in the spring. We go back and acknowledge folks for their hard work. Each division puts together a list of their accomplishments. It's way too detailed to get into here, but please take a moment to kind of read through it at your leisure. And if you do have questions, please don't hesitate to get in touch with me. I'd be happy to answer them. And it does, the back page does also talk about our community outreach. One of the pillars of being a public power community utility is we give back to the community, so we do have also something that I'm very proud of as an employee of RPU, how we give back to the community also.
Mark, I had a question for you. Under your 2016 accomplishments, one of the items is that you developed a leadership training curriculum to help prepare your future staffing members and succession planning process. I was just wondering if you worked with human resources to create that or have shared it with HR. It sounds like something that could be leveraged to assist other city departments.
Yes, we have been working in collaboration with Linda on the program, and she's aware of it. We kind of used RPU as a pilot for this, and we'll have continued discussions to see if we can roll this out to other city departments.
All right, good. Thank you. Any other questions for Mark? All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor.
All right, we'll move on and some continued discussion about the Armory proposal. Mr. Reeves reminded me to remind all of you that much of the information, of course, is still business confidential, so you can want to talk a little bit in generalities, but so be it. Mr. Campy?
I was just going to ask the city attorney maybe to explain what becomes public when, so that we would, I do understand it's confidential, just to make sure everyone in the public understands the process as well.
It's the Minnesota state law that data produced in response to a request for proposals
is non-public until such time as all the proposals are in, at which time only the name of the proposers becomes public. Thereafter, everything remains non-public until the government entity actually signs a contract with the selected vendor, at which time everything becomes public except for trade secret information. We haven't reached that point in this process, so we're still under the legal requirement that we keep all the data private or non-public except for the name.
Perfect. I wanted to make sure we got the explanation for everyone that's been asking questions about when the stuff becomes public. Now I know.
And again, it's a state law. It's not something we made up. All the government entities throughout the state have to follow that law.
Thank you.
So I'll start off, and I'll just kind of keep watching the city attorney or Aaron, and they'll throw the yellow flag if I get out of bounds.
Yellow card.
Yeah. The additional information was helpful from both of the proponents. I noticed a lot of similarities in terms of some of the financial terms, some of the other aspects related to the lots to the north and how they would or would not use those. And, you know, it's still very compelling, still both good proposals. As I read through them, one of the proposals still seems to jump out at me, just primarily because of the mixed use that they're talking about. When we talk about a bookstore or some things like that seem to resonate in my mind more so with some of the visitors and people that live in the downtown area. So, you know, the mixed use is what seemed more attractive to me. The other aspects seem relatively on par with one another. Other comments? Campion.
I was going to ask the city attorney, so we get a proposal in front of us that lists a set of uses and some schematics about how that is dreamed up to be implemented. What sort of contractual obligation will the council have that will be used or executed as a result of the selection of the RFP? So we get down the line, we sign a contract. What happens if they're unable to execute that vision? What happens if they stop being able to execute the vision sometime down the road?
Well, first of all, the proposal itself will be incorporated as part of the contract. So the terms and representations made in the proposal will become part of the contract documents. In terms of consequences, I'm not sure if we have a boilerplate or not, but we would build into the contract what consequences staff or the council believe should occur if they default.
What we have in there now, we'll expand on that in the agreement. You know, it could be a detailed purchase agreement or a development agreement. This is the buyer shall have obtained a building permit, commence construction and building improvements within one year of the date of the city council approval of the agreement with the buyer, and shall have substantially completed the construction within 2 years of the date of city council approval. Obviously, if they haven't met the one-year deadline, there'd be a reverter clause that would give it back to the city. You need to work on language on what happens if they were to start construction and not complete construction.
Is there a bond requirement?
We haven't got that in there yet. We talked about doing a letter of credit or some kind of escrow account.
Well, by state law, there must be a performance bond and a payment bond. Maybe the payment bond wouldn't apply here because of the materials, but still, there might be a bond that we could take action against as well should there be a default.
Okay. I guess if you make a selection, we'll work on those other details.
Yeah.
Let me mention real quick, I forgot to mention this up front. I think most of the council is aware we received kind of a last-minute proposal over the last few days, and given the process we've gone through for the RFP and so forth and some of the other steps we've gone through, I'm going to assume that the council would not wish to entertain any new proposals at this stage of the game.
That is correct.
I agree with that. The one thing I would say is I appreciate having it in hand because nothing's final until we have a contract signed.
Absolutely.
And it's good to have that piece of knowledge of what, you know, the market may bear for this property as another one. So I don't want to say that it was a fruitless endeavor by any means. One of the items that I'm kind of interested in discussing is I assume that irrespective of which way the council goes with the decision, that failure to meet the terms of the contract will also revert ownership then back to the city for whatever was paid. I assume that's kind of a standard operating thing. Okay. And then I was wondering if perhaps you could summarize, and I know for one it's not very complicated, but summarize how we expect the city would handle parking concerns for the two different entities.
One of the entities has indicated that they will commit to leasing parking spaces, and so that's a definite payment that we would receive. And then there would be a requirement that that would be in place till 2024 when, you know, there's some issues on the site that it's not as developable until 2024.
Right.
At that point, you know, we provide parking. We make that same option available for them within four blocks of the site. The other group has indicated they may lease. They're not certain that they will lease. So it's
and
definite, the other one's not.
Everyone's okay with a market rate lease, or is it a...
It's pretty close to a market rate lease.
Okay.
It's not quite.
Is that lease rate going to be stipulated full into the future, or do we have the ability to...
Well, the first 10 years, it would be a fixed rate
for
the one that's committing to leasing, and after that, it would be market rate.
Okay. That sounds like a very good approach.
So, other comments, or do one of the proposals strike you as a bit better than the other, Mr. Ruska?
I like them both. I think they're both solid, and I like one more than the other, and I'm ready to make a decision. I'm ready to at least kind of weigh in as far as if I pick one. I have no problem picking one right now.
Anybody else? Mr. Roger?
I think we owe it to the process to make a decision. I too want them both, but we only have one armory. But I do think that this process reveals the kind of talent we have here locally, and I think that both of these are very viable projects. And depending on which way it goes too, I think there's perhaps an opportunity to work with the second party, because I think both of these are additive to what we have for offerings in Rochester. And further, even though it didn't make the final cut, I think that finding some space to do what the collaborative was proposing to do is still in our best interest from the standpoint that that reaches a segment of the population that nothing else we have potentially reaches. So I don't, whichever way it goes, I don't want to lose touch with the other party.
I think the rest of the council, and I can generally seem to be gathering the consensus here and in agreement. I thought both of the proposals were fantastic. Some of the proposals that didn't make it also were very, very good. But I have to say one of them does a job of continuous activation of the space that I think weighs very heavily in my decision-making process. That the idea of having continual occupation of the facility versus kind of more of a event-driven experience tends to tip the scale, in my opinion, toward one of the two options. And I think would also selfishly in terms of the city's interest, future valuation of the parking lot becomes a real increased, I think, very obviously through one of the proposals. Maybe both of the proposals could be an argument, but one of the proposals I can see a clear transition to the value of that lot. So in my opinion, that one of these is a little bit ahead of the other one when I have to kind of render that. I don't know how we want to make the decision.
Well, I was going to ask the city attorney. We can use the name.
Sure, it's public.
They testified to the committee whole.
Right. But more importantly, under state law, the name of each proposer is a public document.
Right.
My preference at this point, given that I would like to continue to see both of them, is the Castle Community Project.
Agreed. I agree.
I might be on a 6-1, but I like the entourage one better.
I'm with you, Ed. Part of the reason I like that is that they're giving back to the community in the sense of that $10,000 a month. I also like that they've done it before. They've taken this business model and applied it to other businesses and have been successful at that. So when you look at it that way, it's... I like that business model.
I I don't have a horse in this race. I could be persuaded to go for either one of them. I will say that I am incredibly impressed with the activation that the Haas-Henderson-Anderson proposal does the Castle community. I don't have a strong favorite, but I'd be if that's the will of the council, I'm happy to support that. The entourage brings a great deal of credibility that's and experience behind them that's hard to replicate.
And I was just going to add along those lines, the thing that appealed to me, I guess, more about the Castle community is, and I mentioned it earlier, the idea of an art store, a record store, a bookstore, things that are real amenities that we've heard people talk about, both residents and visitors. Mm-hmm. The entourage is largely an entertainment venue, mm-hmm. and I worry a little bit that, we've got the Civic Theater, we're going to have the Chateau, we've got some other opportunities, and to your point earlier, I think I would very much like to keep entourage in this case, in some measure of discussion about perhaps using their model to put in another venue. That was just
mine, Mr. Bilbray. And both projects are very good, but what appealed to me about the Castle is this is going to be an activation. It'll be there from morning till night, where the entourage looked like it would be pretty much an evening kind of activity. So it's something that people can expect, the consistency of being open, having people there, I think is important for this thing to make it viable. And I think that's an important reason, and that's the reason I went that way. I like the entourage. I think it was very cool, their presentation. I like the fact that there would be different entertainment brought into Rochester than we typically see. But the fact is, the Castle showed me that it could be used longer and more active, and more members of the community probably using it. So that's why I liked that project.
The one thing that I'd like to see, and I know there are some connections there that'll help make this happen, but I'm very... I have no issue at all supporting the Castle community, but I want to specifically reach out to the entourage group, because we have a number of venues where there are potential partnership opportunities there, and I think that we need to build those cultural relationships between some of the firm Twin Cities institutions, mm-hmm. and we need to figure out how to keep them interested in Rochester and help them boost the greater offerings that we have for the community. So I'm okay with the Castle community, but I want a concerted effort to continue to work with Party 2.
And I think that's appropriate.
So would the consensus be that...
The consensus will be that staff is directed to begin the process of negotiating a formal contract mm-hmm. with this particular proposer, which will be brought back to the council at a formal meeting for a vote, which you can do either up or down. You're not bound to vote a certain way when the formal contract comes before the council.
Right.
And nothing more.
Okay.
When will we expect that process to conclude?
Well, it's probably going to take a couple of weeks.
Okay. A couple of weeks is fine. So. Yeah.
And I know we've had some previous discussion on this, but are we going to allow anything that would encumber the parking lots into the future, or are we pretty intent on there won't be any rights of first refusal, that kind of stuff?
No. They'd be leasing there for 10 years, 20 through 12, not 10 years, through 2024. Mm-hmm. And then we have the option to move them to a different location, or if something is constructed there that has parking, they could be in the same site, otherwise they'd be in a different site after 2024. Mm-hmm. So, no, we're not encumbering with right first refusal with either one.
All right. So, do you have the direction you were looking for?
Yes, we do. We'll okay. start working on it.
Did you just say yes to that?
I did say yes.
We don't normally do that.
Well, yeah, because I restated it.
Rare as
well.
Hold on.
No, hold on.
No, we have plenty of direction. Thank you very much.
All right. So, any other comments on that, Mr. Ruskin?
Well, I feel that there might be a little bit of an opportunity missed here for something. I'm supportive of, if that's a consensus of the council. I want to point out that I think the best thing about this is the options that we've got. We're good options, and this yeah. whole process has really worked nice, and I hope we would consider the same kind of process maybe when we look at the Chateau. I think to see what people can bring forward and different options that are out there can take this and take it from the government trying to do it to letting the public do it and letting the people get out and private industry get out there and try it. So, you know, this is a nice, it's a nice outcome that the process worked and you know, I'm supportive to moving forward.
All right. Anyone else?
I'll just let me be the first to say congratulations to Mr. Haas.
All right, good. Thank you. Well, we'll move on then to our next item, which is the Heart of the City update. John?
Thank you. Give me just a second to get it set up.
And hold that thought for about 15 minutes here.
I just want to point out that we're successfully beating our own timestamps. So
this is the standard to be met.
Yeah. Way to go, guys.
We're ahead by a solid time.
But don't you look at your GPS and say that's the time to beat?
There you go. The first meeting with the timestamps, you don't want to be too far ahead or you'll set the standard really
high. Hopefully you didn't jinx it.
Mr. Staber, let me tee this up.
All right. Yes, go ahead.
Let me just say that a little more than a year ago, we jointly began this process, the city and the BMC, and assembled a community advisory committee chaired by the Honorable Mayor, did an RFP that resulted in the selection of an incredible team that has been before you on several occasions in the past, one of the best in the country. We asked this team to do the following, to complete the schematic design phase of Heart of the City. And schematic design is a very distinct phase that ultimately will lead to construction. What we had seen before in the DMC plan would be considered the conceptual phase. And we asked the team to build off that conceptual design from the DMC plan to a schematic design. And the natural transition that will take place is that the concept design, what we saw in the DMC plan, would evolve and take shape as they conducted their more intense research of the key markets, the residents, the employees, and the visitors to our community. We asked them to work with the Community Advisory Committee and with the public throughout this process and to provide periodic milestone updates, which they've done here and publicly. And we also challenged them to come up with a world-class, iconic solution to complement the world-class enterprise we have at Mayo here in downtown Rochester.
I thought he was talking about the council.
We were hoping that we would, our expectation was that we would see both a design, schematic design, but also cost estimates for the capital improvements at the schematic design level of detail, as well as the operations and maintenance and the governance and business model. So those were the challenges we put before the team, and that's what they're here to present. Now, we're not asking for any action today. You've just received this report. We know you've just received it, and so it's likely you have lots of questions, and there's going to be plenty of time beyond today, certainly today, but beyond, to ask questions and to internalize this information and to help us adjust it. So while we're not asking for action today, we certainly welcome feedback or questions. So with that, Gary, I don't know if there's any additional comments that you want to make.
No, I think that covers it. I think they've gone through a very extensive engagement process. They've talked to, I think, all of the adjacent building owners and had a couple of open houses. As with anything, there's a lot of different opinions and things as they go along. I think they've made a really good effort to try and come up with something that is unique to Rochester and has had a lot of support.
So with that, I think we're ready for their
I was going to make a quick comment. I know we've all had an opportunity to view some of the information in small group settings, and we express some of our views and opinions. So one thing I'd like to do as we go along here, we might choose to reiterate some of those things as they might impact your final design. So
So the way we've got our agenda set up is in a little welcoming context. Patrick, thank you for getting it set up. We're going to do an overview of the schematic design and get into some of the preliminary results regarding operations and maintenance and implementation. But most important is to be able to answer any and all questions you've got. As Patrick said, this isn't a decision-making meeting, but it is an opportunity for discussion. So before we dig in, you people have seen the reports. Some of you have been maybe able to dig into those. Is there any burning questions that you want to ask at this point in time before we get into a little bit of our slideshow?
Yeah, this is a bit of a leading question, but could you perhaps articulate exactly what it is you're looking from the council for today?
Yeah. Well, it's going to be, first off, I think this is information sharing. Mm-hmm. Seriously. I mean, it's to get information out there and to get feedback. We're not done with our schematic design work. We're nearing completion. What we do want to make sure is that we capture feedback as we finalize our work in schematic design, so it's all documented and recorded, so that when and if you choose to advance design, okay, all of that is documented and recorded. Mm-hmm. So feedback, I would say, would be number one. Still contributory ideas. We think we've done a lot in terms of really kind of stretching what the potential could be and getting to a resting point, you know, that feels right, that we feel is right, and the feedback we've been getting feels really right for Rochester.
It's really feedback and documentation. You know, we've been meeting with the whole community and been with each of you individually and in front of you, and today is really about here's where we're at. We've done our best to listen to each person along the way and adjust. And
that's right. Yeah.
And then we'll document that in our booklet, and then the project goes forward, we'll have it.
I just wanted to clear that up because I've had some questions leading into this. So like, well, are you gonna approve it today? How are you gonna fund it? I'm like, wrong meeting for that.
Right. I would agree with that. Yeah. And I think that's my opinion, but I mean, it's your meeting. But we're not here seeking that. Okay. No.
Mr. Bilderbeck.
Just curiosity, if you talk to the businesses, have you talked about their involvement in this as far as costs or anything of that nature, or has it just been conceptual?
Their involvement in terms of costs? Mm-hmm. No. We have spent a lot of time with many local businesses in terms of what do they see as a smart result of investing in the public realm. We've gotten into what are some of their business challenges, what do they see as opportunities with greater activation of the public realm. And that activation part of it is actually really, really important. This isn't just about designing a beautiful place, though a beautiful destination in downtown Rochester would be fantastic, right? It's what is that drive in terms of economic benefit? And so we have listened to... And people want more people to come downtown, and they want people to spend more time downtown, and they want people to linger downtown more. And
so the answer is we haven't engaged in specific cost conversations with them.
No, just been conceptual kind of.
It's been about content and what would be good for their businesses and the area.
Mr. Ruska?
Yeah, I'll give you something to work on here in the next half hour. In the design principles, and I think I shared this with you when we had our small meetings, is to kind of think the design principle really kind of missed the mark here in the Embrace the North area. You know, it's one of the things that you have here. Every picture I see, it's 75 and sunny out, and everything's growing, and it's beautiful, and everybody's happy. Most of those days, everybody's at their cabin, so it's kind of like, you know, just kind of wondering how you're going to find something that is in the other 9 months of the year or the other times of the year, that when we're dealing with 10 below and so on, like, you know, rain and snow and ice and that, if you could kind of help me to feel better about that, I think throughout this it would make me feel a little better with everything.
And I get that comment too, and we've heard it a few times too, to remind it. If nothing else, your images show the lovely warm months before I too often and show us more. We have thought about that.
Okay, all right, thank you.
Appreciate
I'll watch for that in this.
We'll keep that on our list. What else?
All right, have at it.
All right, so I just went to that because Randy or Ed was there. I want to maybe reinforce with this slide. Oh, did we undo some? Okay, Aaron, what did I
Just wait for a second.
You just clap. There you go. How was that?
And I never introduced myself. I'm John Buggy with RSP and Shane Cohen. Thanks, Aaron. So, this is just to reinforce a little bit what was said. We started definitely with the DMC plan and spent a lot of time in your community. And I gotta say, it's been a blast. Gary, Mayor, Patrick, others, you've been great hosts. The city has been a great host. And when we had community input via the community advisory committee that you appointed, or when we did community workshops, people in Rochester have shown up. So we feel the design principle of authentic Rochester, we feel we got it really well. Let's go. Just a few comments about why investing in the public realm. Destination Medical Center is what theme is. The heart of the city is really the central place that defines Rochester. And on, we have said, how do we make this into a destination, a true destination, the public realm, that does serve the residents, the employees, the visitors, and the companions. So that was always top of mind. Why public realm investment, too? It does a lot for a city's brand. When there's a public space that is well designed, that reinforces what the city is all about, it enhances the brand of the city. So we believe that that's been an important part of our work. And important here too is that it attracts people to come and stay downtown. Okay, and it's not just visitors, but also the residents of Rochester too, to come and stay. There's a reason, there are reasons to stay. And also really important, if you look at city after city that has invested in their public realm, the ones that have done it really well and have received a lot of benefit from it, they've done a great job in terms of programming and activating the space. The example here is downtown Cincinnati, it's Fountain Square. Cincinnati is a bigger city than Rochester, it's about 300,000 people. There are events going on in this square every day of the year. That is not quite Rochester, but it's amazing what they do in the wintertime, too. But that doesn't exist in Rochester today. So this destination place that is truly activated 365 days a year as much as possible is what the key is. And if you go to, and when you attend urban design sessions and you learn from the best in urban design, there is a return on public investment, okay? It does drive economic development. So we created a mission. Shane, you want to take it?
Sure. And I'll just follow that the mission came after a meeting with everybody. And it's something that we crafted with the community, and it's something that we crafted with the community advisory committee. And each time we met, and so we've continued to return to it. And it's to create a vibrant, world-class urban downtown that is uniquely Rochester. To attract residents and visitors to the heart of the city, a place that celebrates life, community, health, and wellness 365 days a year. The principles came out of the initial meetings with the community advisory committee meeting, and even before that, when our discovery team went out into the community wearing their green suits and embedded themselves in Rochester and did a lot of interviews with the people of Rochester to figure out what would really make this a place that you would talk about if you visited here, that you would bring your family to, that you would bring your friends to anytime that you came. And this is this moment in time that's what we're talking about. It's not just a cool public space in downtown Rochester. We're actually talking about creating a world-class destination that no one would ever not tell the story about Rochester when they came and visited. So these are the design principles. And it's interesting, the Embrace the North, we'll talk a little bit about it at the end, but it's so much of what you'll hear and what our economic team that's not here today from New York is about programming. The best public spaces today are a partnership
with cities to program those spaces year-round. So these are also, from all of the research, the biggest thing that we heard in walking around Rochester was the patients wanted a place, a contemplative space, and the people of Rochester wanted to invite in. So we heard distract me, get me outside of my head, and we heard invite me in. And we also heard that there was a barrier that needed to be broke down between the people that visit here and the people that live here. And so when we started working with our economic team and programming team, this idea of the 365 Plaza was talked about over and over and over again. And so this work of programming will continue during the next phase, and it'll continue during the construction phase. And they're experts at working with the community and figuring out the program that will happen in a space like this or in Montreal or whenever you are, where these events are happening and they're about the community all the time. The other two really important pieces are diverse retail. There's a retail gap here that's been identified. If you do this right, more retail will come in and attract more businesses down there, and then finally a flexible program. You want a plaza that can be flexible and change. The heart of the city, so Gonda's always on your left, University Shops on your right, the Peace Plaza in the middle, the Market Plaza, has always been identified by the entire team in the community as the place. And 2nd and 1st Avenue have been identified as the places to invite people up. They really want to be really strikingly beautiful places and inviting places that pull you up, but the heart of the city, Peace Plaza, actually wants to retain you and wants to hold you there. So there's 5 initiatives, both that are looked at in regards to design and programming and cost. The first initiative is 2nd Avenue Plaza. The second one is the 1st Avenue, the street that we drive on today and will continue to, and the alley associated alongside the University Shops. Market Plaza, which is, as we all know, is Peace Plaza today. Theater Square, which is the space adjacent to the Chateau Theater. And then art. As you saw, that is one of the 3 ingredients of all great public spaces today. Cities and communities are investing substantially, significantly in public art as a magnet for people. So we'll start with 2nd. 2nd today is... there's some nice materials. It's not the most inviting place. You don't see a lot of activity in here. You don't actually feel compelled to go and hang out in this space. And so how it's been conceived and redesigned is there's an art installation at the end of it that you're always focused on. We'll talk about that in a little bit. A phenomenal artist who celebrates the earth and sky. And then there's contemplative gardens that are all about Rochester along that. So you move to the sides. And the garden spaces with seating you move down into. So if you're a patient, you can contemplate there. If you're a person from Rochester, you can go and sit there and have a conversation. And so it's a contemplative space. As you move towards the Gonda, and this is the view that anybody that's gone inside of the Gonda has seen, you're looking out. And there's this incredible level of quality that happens inside the Gonda. In my experience, and I've been doing this for 25 years around the whole world, Gonda is one of the most civic buildings I've ever been into and stood at the base of. It is absolutely civic. And so the idea is, how do you take that feeling and extend it out into Peace Plaza and invite people out into it?
Help me understand what you mean by civic.
Civic, even though it's a private building, it feels public.
Okay.
And it feels inviting, like it feels like a place to gather. Now, it'll always be private, right? But if you can take that quality of materials and extend it outside, we think that's the key to Peace Plaza. So you can think of it as like rolling out the carpet. You take that beautiful stone that's on the Gonda and just go like this across Peace Plaza, and then you activate, we've activated the center. That's creating a civic space that connects the two. So what you see in the foreground here is an art installation by James Terrell. That would be for the public, for the people, as well as the patients. They could activate it from the lower level of Gonda. There's an elevator that would take you up to a newly imagined plaza space in front of the Grand Kaler. So the Kaler and the Mayo Gonda building, you can just walk back and forth. It's a very pedestrian-friendly space. And Peace Plaza we'll get into, but it's this kind of beautiful, again, Gonda carpet that's laid down. And then 2nd is off to the right. We're redesigning about 40 miles of streets right now throughout the world. And when I first measured this street, I got really excited by the width. It was a lot of room and a street that doesn't really feel like a pedestrian realm. And so that means there's a lot of opportunity to resection it and really create a vibrant street that you can drive and walk on. So what these images are representing is that you're narrowing the width of the road down to 24 feet. You still have traffic going through, but there's no curb. And the same material on the sidewalk happens on the road. We would be the first initiative in Minnesota. You would lead this as a true curbless plaza street, one of street. And you use benches and lights and planting to set the tone on where pedestrians walk.
Let me pause you there before you go back to that slide, if you would. So this is just an example, and I realize this is getting into the detail, but this slide exemplifies one of the things that I saw about, and I'm talking about it from a public safety feature. I see the materials used, and we know that there will still be some vehicles traveling here to get to the hotel. And on this slide in particular, I see an automobile about to exit. I see a person in a wheelchair. I see two children down further playing in the middle. So without the curbs, and I get that, but I think you've got to have some sort of demarcation,
you do.
And especially one that will survive in inclement weather,
you do.
But they see it. So otherwise, I just see that as very problematic. That's just an example of one of the observations I saw as I was going through the detail.
It's a great observation, and so all the city of Boston has just done an amazing job with smart streets like this. Mm-hmm. And so there's always these both textures that make noise as well as colors on the edge. And we're showing it as a very small delineation here. We could make that much more substantial. And those are exactly the kind of comments we need to go into design development mm-hmm. with. So there's all sorts of evidence that these streets are just as safe as a normal street, mm-hmm. but they're actually way more friendly. So you just have to do that, and that's a great point. We do envision this being...
We have another question.
I do. Sorry, I was raising my hand like I was in second grade. is there a concern? Have you talked to the business owners about parking?
We have, yeah. And there is parking. We've talked to every business owner here. Most of them, I would have to say, about first. There's an overwhelming excitement within the community about it. The business owners on the right side of the street would like drop off only up by the inn. They feel like those meters are really kind of ran out and plugged by the people that work there. On the north end, once you get past the Wells Fargo Skyway, those parking places would be maintained. And again, none of this is set in stone. These conversations about parking and what we'll do and will continue right through design development. But there's been a lot of support. The big stakeholder feedback here is we've got to keep the traffic open. We've got to access Marriott, obviously. And the economic team thinks that traffic should be open here so that people can actually drive by and see Peace Plaza. Mm-hmm. But you'll control the lights so you have very little traffic. So there's a lot you can do to control traffic besides shutting it down.
And I'll add to that just a bit too, which is, again, we're at schematic design. Yeah. So the notion here is that it's a pedestrian street more than it is a car street. Okay. And in the next phase of design is where I would say the detail of the right amount of parking and the right amount of sidewalk pedestrian space would really get ironed. So as far as that level of detail, there's great interest in the retailers about how much parking, what type of parking, and where is it, and also they see a benefit of more sidewalk space too. So in the next stage of design is where those conversations continue. But a pedestrian-oriented street, people love it. A street that has more amenities and it's more comfortable to walk on and attracts people.
Mr. Atkins, you have a comment?
I think I pointed this out the last time we were in this world, this part of the neighborhood. There's a plaza easement close by or adjacent that has some very serious restrictions on what happens and when it happens. Mm-hmm. And that would have to be amended significantly to allow for some of this to occur, yes.
The one on Peace Plaza would. This one doesn't require any amendment of the...
But you're butting up against the one on Peace Plaza.
We'll get to that in a second.
I'm
there is an element there that would have to, if we kept it in, which...
And what is significant? Zero. When we get to the plaza, we'll talk about that. Okay.
Yeah.
But I know it's significant. I negotiated it with the adjoining property owners.
Yeah, we've read it, too.
Yes.
And we had lots of conversations with Gary and Tina about it. Lots of them.
But I want to get to it'd be great to have a full conversation.
Yeah, and we're the opposite of avoiding it. All right. The alley is also part of the First Avenue Initiative, and alleys today are being identified all throughout cities. You're having these movements today to identify spaces that aren't used very much and turn them into public amenities. And alleys are kind of a fantastic place to do that. We took an idea that was produced by a local artist, the four local artists that we've been talking with and incorporating their ideas into this project. And this is one called Information Alley, where all the events that happened in Rochester would be projected as you move down this alley. The other part of activating an alley is just putting cool lights in there and good paving and turning it into a vibrant space. So it's actually pretty simple. This is, okay, now we're moving to Peace Plaza. And in Peace Plaza, we've come through a lot of iterations. And the iterations that we landed on, again, is this carpet that comes out of Gonda and goes out. And I think you'll see when you go visit there on a weekend today, there's no activity there, right? That's this picture was taken during the weekend. And so we envisioned this as the center of Peace Plaza, all the benches and the lights and these trees being moved over to there, the art installation at one end at the Gonda Inn and another art installation at Theater Square. And you move on both sides. And the center is activated, and you can have pop-up retail.
Before you could leave that slide, go ahead.
Yeah, so it's temporary retail. What you're basically doing is you're programming the space, and this is kind of a huge ingredient from the economic advisory team, is you want to attract other businesses down here to create this vibrancy. And it's good for all the businesses, actually. If you have really good pop-up businesses here, it makes all the businesses surrounding better, and it also makes people want to invest in the surrounding businesses. So there is this very interesting thing that happens there. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say that I get it as far as trying to make the space more inviting and attractive and, you know, seating and some greenery and so forth. But one of the things that I'm reminded of is the current Peace Plaza space. Part of its attractiveness is that it is somewhat open, which makes it more versatile. Mm-hmm. So we see a variety of events down there, from staged events to weddings to musical performances to Thursdays on First. So I would just want to be careful that we don't box ourselves in too much and eliminate some of the versatility that we enjoy today.
So Jenna Bowman is on the team, on the community advisory committee, and we've met extensively with her group. We've had workshops, charrettes. We are actually providing more programmable area for sitting and activation in this design than the other one. And so we'll show you a few
diagrams. We've got some diagrams to actually show that, Randy, too.
We have one of the issues, and I am very supportive of the we're cold here in Minnesota. We might as well embrace it because we're not changing that. Mm-hmm. One of the issues with, you know, with our population getting outdoors is there, we have the steam available here. Are we looking at ways of doing some passive or active heating of the surfaces to ensure that this area stays clear without a lot of maintenance?
Yeah, I mean, we have radiant heat in all the cost estimates that's been forwarded to you. So the real way, if you look at the really successful places, and Montreal is like probably the best city to look at right now, that all their public spaces are used all winter long, it's programming. Mm-hmm. It happens. So you want to heat the spaces and not have it be a dangerous space to be, and then you want to have lots of events out there. You also want beautiful lighting and warm lighting and holiday lights and all those things. But beyond that, we live in Minnesota, and it's the question I get asked more than anything, what are you doing in the winter, you know, out there? The honest truth is it's up to the cities to work with their teams to get the programming rolling all winter long to get people out there.
Mr. Mayor?
You have a shop of some sort in front of the Siemens building there?
Yes.
Correct. Are we okay with that?
Yeah, there's...
Is Mayo okay with that? And the only reason I say this is when we had where the Peace Fountain is now, colored.
Yep. Yeah.
That was originally going to be water, real water.
Yep.
And there was going to be water running down some rocks right next to the cement.
Yep.
And late in the game, it was like, no, you're not going to do that there.
Yeah, it's a really good point. So there's 24 feet on both sides of the plaza, right? So there's a central bar of 24 feet in the middle. That is programmed with benches and places to sit in these places for this retail to pop up. And then there's another 24 feet on both sides. So it's I don't have the slide that shows all the lights that are there today, but we've met with Mayo extensively, Mayo leadership,
okay,
who's super supportive of the plan.
Yeah.
So we're good there.
to the
and
point.
And what I want to add to the point of a shop there, because that was part of the question,
yeah.
too.
Yes.
Shown at a shop there is also a temporary shop.
Yeah. Yes.
So we're not seeing permanent structures in that center space?
Correct.
So,
yeah. It's all temporary, which has to do with the easement as well as the program that's been doing.
And the easement says vending by food, craft, and other market vendors. Yeah. So I assume you're trying to fall within that category.
Correct.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, we carefully crafted that.
Luster connection. That's enough to allow a Christmas market, though.
Pardon?
That's enough to allow a Christmas market similar to European city centers.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right.
Oh, the IT guy.
I think he's still there. While they're pulling this up, the next image, one of the other things that we're proposing that the city of Rochester would lead as an initiative in Minnesota is the ability to get outside of the Skyway. So there's been lots of proposals about this, but you have a really active Skyway community, and it's successful. There's a lot of businesses up there, and there's a very active subway community, right? You have 2 million people traveling underneath East Plaza. We've worked really close with the economic team to say if we can get people to get outside of the Skyway and activate them so that you're creating activity on the outside of them and they get to breathe air, as well as pull people up from the subway level, you're going to make all three levels of businesses thrive more. And this is something that the economic team has worked on extensively in other cities and with their research on. You activate the street level and you make both of the other levels more successful.
Sorry, Mr. Clickshare, for a moment.
So this is a view out of,
IT is not my specialty.
This is a view outside of the Skyway that connects between the Kaler and the Marriott. And the idea here is if you just provide these decks, so there's doors and you go out on and you can set up for lunch in the warmer months, you actually get eyes down on the plaza. And so you have this kind of visual activation that's happening at both levels. And it's a very important ingredient to making a really a vibrant, world-class destination as opposed to just a good spot.
I support having railings there.
Yeah, we would definitely have railings there.
Oh, yeah.
No. Nice job.
This is a view from First, looking the way it is now. And there, here, Mayor, you can see where the lights are positioned now so that there's the middle is free and the sides feel a little bit cluttered. So when you move to this, you still have circulation on both sides, but you actually have more square footage when you calculate the areas for programming. So this is the basic idea that this kind of beautiful material, it's like the Gonda building out into the center, beautiful, compatible stone on both sides. This is another view from elevated from the shops. And although there's a lot of subways under Peace Plaza, when you go under the road, we have lots of room. So we can plant trees and create some really kind of fantastic enclosure at the intersection of First and First. And that creates a space delineation between Theater Square and Peace Plaza.
Well, again, while you're on that slide, could you help me understand a bit better the staircase to the platform? I don't get that one.
Sure. It appears lots of people don't get that. It's the newest fun.
I'm willing to admit it for that.
It's the newest fun topic to talk about in part of the city. You got to have something, right? So we're going to talk about the rest. No, the whole idea is super simple, and this could be a temporary set of stairs. This could be no stairs. The stage could go there. Theater Square, which we're going to talk about next, this is the beginning of it, has been designed as a space that is complementary to the Chateau Theater. And its own space. So if you just let it bleed completely, you want to delineate the space, which you could do with trees, to create a distinct space that's Theater Square that's different from the rest of Peace Plaza. That allows you to close that off and program it for more intimate events, and it allows you to have Chateau involved in the programming of it, so theater is happening and family events are happening that are complementary to Chateau. So this is about flexibility at Theater Square, and it's about a place where performance and plays happen for families and children, and then it can also be changed and programmed into a fountain event, which we'll show here. So Theater Square today is a nice space. If you go down there on a day like today, there's lots of people kind of hanging out there. The design team doesn't feel like that it's world class, that there's another level that we need to take this to, as is with the rest of the project, to truly make a destination, world class destination. And so we've reimagined it as finding the perfect location
for Peace Fountain and creating a new fountain that is more sustainable with water use. It's a half inch deep. It can be drained for any event, and performance can happen out there. And the stairs, again, were designed as kind of the civic gathering point for people to sit, but it's not being well received, and so that will be rethought of in design development. Mm-hmm. You also see an art installation at this end, hanging in the sky. And we've been interviewed two really amazing artists, that world-class artists that do public space art that's hanging in the sky. And the reason we have two, one at the Gonda Inn and one at the First Avenue Inn, is to get circulation to happen back and forth between the two. Mm-hmm. And it's actually really important that we have something that everybody wants to go to and everybody wants to take people to at the intersection of First and First and at Gonda. The reason I said the Gonda is the most civic building I've ever seen is you actually want the community to go have their weddings and events right at the face of Gonda as well as down at this end. So you want this energy that goes back and forth. So these are the programming studies that we did with Jenna's group, and we did quite a lot of them. When you take the temporary space out of there, the upper one is Zumbra on the plaza, so you can have physical or yoga mats out there, and you can have 80 yoga mats. You have 300 people for a wedding, where you could either set up right at the base of the art installation outside of the Gonda. There's 42 booths for an art fair or any sort of a fair. That's the same as you have at your farmer's market right now, that fit neatly into both of these spaces. And Thursdays on First happens vibrantly, up to 10,000 people sit on the plaza. We've also increased seating by about 10 times, seating with backs. So now when you go down there, there's a reason to sit and stay, which is the other thing you really try to do.
Mr. Campion?
I did not notice the last time you showed me this. Is that a stage that's in the middle of what we would refer to as Peace Plaza today?
No. Is that Theater Square? You mean here?
Yeah.
Yeah, this originally was a stage here and stairs here. Now, the most recent stakeholder feedback we have has made us rethink that, okay. Like reversing it, actually.
I was going to say, I imagine some of the Rust Cafe stuff down there that happens would be a little bit encumbered by that. Okay.
Yeah, first, I think people didn't get it quite at first. And so, you know, the stage might end up here if you have one. And again, that could be temporary. The whole idea of this plaza is to make a flexible, activated plaza, yep. that is complementary to Chateau. Yes? Okay. So the last is just kind of a summary. We've interviewed these artists. The most important part of the artists that we've chosen and that are in the cost estimate are twofold. One is they're activated by people, so people can interact with them. And the second is they're willing to collaborate with local artists here, which is something we're quite interested in. So that's Rafael Lazzaro-Hemmer or Janet Eckelman. And that would be a piece that would float in the sky. Another one is called a rain elevator or a snow elevator that would get people from the lower level of the Gonda up to the Kaler Plaza. And you could have a snowstorm in there. This was an installation at the LACMA. And then finally, James Terrell, who's winding down his career, is super interested in this project for one reason. It's a chance to bring the community together, both patients and the people that live in Rochester, and create a space that celebrates the sky. And so when it goes from light to day, day to night is when you go into this. Again, we've been working with four local artists as a part of this whole process and integrating their ideas into the project, and that will continue. Activating retail, and we really think, go back to the principles of the 365 Plaza, you need activated retail, pop-up retail. You need a flexible program that can be programmed 365, and this program will continue. Year-round
use.
That's year-round use and world-class art. Most of all, we will continue to work with the community to make this Rochester. So we're going to talk, John's going to present.
Yeah, I'm just going to do a time check, too, because I think we've gobbled up most of our time. So,
well, we've kind of been doing questions.
Yeah, I know. I just want to make sure we're okay.
Yeah.
What we do have is a little bit more than costs and then operations and maintenance and then implementation. I'll try to do that in 3 minutes. Is that 4 minutes?
Cool.
Okay. Right. So in terms of how we went around thinking about the design and also pricing the design, these three concepts were really important. Shane's already talked really well about quality in terms of the Gonda building and materiality, about craft and also legacy. Legacy is really important because that's about the memory part of this. What do people retain? What do they recall? What are their memories of experiencing the heart of the city in Rochester? Chicago's Millennium Park came up many, many times in our conversations with community members too, where, you know, the bean and the artwork there there's a quality of the physical environment there too that people really resonated well with. We developed costs around each of those four initiatives. As we looked at it, we thought about large trees and good soil, not wimpy little trees and kind of cheap soil. We thought about granite and concrete pavers, again, thinking about quality. Snow melt is in our price throughout the entire space. We thought about power for all the events and water distribution for all the events, too. So we've done a very comprehensive cost analysis and cost estimate right now to make sure it was really targeting at that world class. And as you've seen, it's expensive. It's a lot of money. This is the total cost or estimate right now. And included in that cost, I just want to make a note that we've included in it within this dollar amount, 15% for general conditions and contractor fees, et cetera, and also another 10%, but it's a contingency amount too. And we thought, and we have this in great detail, which will be part of our report so that everybody can look in detail about where all the costs are. But this is a starting point for making decisions and thinking about, boy, what is our level of investment and how do we phase this if it needs to be phased?
I was also just going to say it's a continuation of where we started with the cost from the last plan that was done in the master plan.
Important to say, yeah. So in the DMC plan, the light pavilion, the balcony, and the ice pavilion, if you had tallied those all up, they were $49 million. So it's not that we targeted that, but we were aware of that being at least some history in terms of understanding what costs might be here. And again, we've broken down these costs in detail, but here's an example of Second Avenue. We've got the total cost, the square footage, and the dollars per square foot. And we've got other examples of other similar projects that we can share comparatives with you. Same thing with the alleys, Theater Square. Art, obviously, is just a standalone cost, an estimate of what those would be. Again, we're trying to be very realistic with you and not sugarcoat any of this.
One other interesting point on the cost of this particular project is Nicollet Mall just finished, which I worked on, which was $49 million. I think the level of materials and what we're delivering for the city here is like substantially above that. Nicollet Mall won't change the city. This will change the city forever. This is actually a legacy moment. So I think we get a lot more value.
We've gone through in our developing operation and maintenance plan and strategy, and you've seen some of that in the material presented. So we're looking also at how do you maintain and operate this facility and how can that be funded? So what are the different revenue sources? And what's the gap in terms of operating and maintenance? One recommendation that our design team has is with RDA, you've got a really great group of people who know Rochester, know planning and events in Rochester, and we'd recommend that they stay involved, but they would have to grow in terms of capacity and ability to make it a real 365-day plaza. We are developing a phasing and implementation strategy.
Yeah. On the previous slide.
Yeah.
Is the increased scope of the RDA considered separate from the estimated operating revenue necessary?
No.
To so some of that revenue,
some of that expense, it'll be a cost actually as well as, right? So there'll be added staff that was
separate from the 394.
No. It's included.
It is included.
It's included. So,
yeah.
But it's really important. The HR and I made a big point of saying, you know, they really would recommend, every city needs a group that's going to really dedicate themselves to this. And they have incredible examples. Like the Cincinnati one that we showed you was literally last year, they literally had something every day of the year. Something.
Sure. I just wanted to make sure that was included in the $400,000 to $500,000.
Yes, it is. Yeah.
Let me follow on with that. With the $400,000 to $500,000, too. This is not incremental. This is just what it will cost to program the new space, understanding that we're currently programming the existing space as well.
Correct. Yeah.
So part of that, you know, we have a public funding portion of that's a big range there, 180 to 181,000 K. If you could narrow that down for us a little bit, that'd be good. But
That's humor.
Yeah,
that's good.
But I would say that we're putting a fair amount into that already. So we're not looking at a huge incremental part. And I obviously, from the Parks Department, I'm interested in what the staffing needs are going to be and the operating needs are going to be.
Well, that's really important too, because Park and Rec does a great job with maintenance of the space too, and our recommendation would be that continues as well.
I think they put 85,000 a year into it now.
And these numbers are fresh for a lot of people too. So it's again, our job, our responsibility is to bring you know, our best estimates and for us to then as a group kind of chew on those and figure out what they mean for us. And then we'll be delivering a phasing implementation plan, which gets at, you know, in year one, yeah, you need to continue design, you need to really work on the programming and beginning to augment that so it's well integrated with the design, getting at clearly governance and financing, how that will work too. So more on that as we go forward. There's a comment, can you do this in one phase? Yeah, you can. Can you do it in multiple phases? Yeah, you can. Our instinct is, and we disagree, it's friendly here, we recommend a single phase, in terms of at least bidding out the work and getting best value out of that. The work would need to be phased in some manner, but that's part of the detail that comes to the next stage.
There's three values that HR&A would really want us to talk about in doing that. There's an economic value to doing it all at once. To take on an initiative, you would still stage the construction. The other one is you get the benefit of the brand, and it sets the stage for all the future work that would happen in Rochester with the heart of the city. You want to come out of the gate with something really substantial and make a significant impact so the whole community understands the investment and the return on the investment. So that's what it's about.
And two, that we thought something for you to consider too is what sort of evaluative criteria should you put on the work we've done to figure out a next step? So here's a list, and this will be part of our document for you as well too. In terms of some of the things you should be considering, obviously cost, source of the funds, you can read them, but they're all important and they might serve as a framework for your decision making. Because there are a lot of decisions to make about, boy, what are these going to implement? How do we implement it? Is it the right thing for us? And so we're going to try to help you with that by serving up at least some criteria for you to consider. Okay. There you go.
I'd like to jump to your previous list.
Yeah.
I'd like to jump to number two because I think that's going to determine a lot of what gets done and when it gets done.
Right.
And just, I've talked with some of the stakeholders in this too, that there needs to be the next phase that we need out of this. What you showed today was inspirational and would certainly be a benefit to that part of the community. When it comes to the sources of funds, particularly on the source of capital, I don't see the city with the other challenges of necessarily having dollars to put in the capital side. I see this as a DMC function. And one of the challenges with that, too, is we're going to need some budgeting and planning and how we can potentially use DMC funds not only to fund the bulk of the public portion of this, but also we've got the Chateau Theater going on at the same time, and the discussions can't be separate. So
that's why number six is up there too.
So what I think is fantastic about this is we get to kick this back to the DMCC and say, okay, show us what you got, and evaluate it when it comes back to us, because I think that's going to be the driving factor for a lot of this. And this discussion of, do you do it all at once? Do you stage it? I think a lot of that has to do, too, with what is the availability of funds that are going to be for this, because DMC, as Mr. Newman correctly points out, is very backloaded.
Mr. Hickey? Yeah, I appreciate the update and the discussion of operational costs, because I think this is going to be primarily the capital cost, but primarily DMC. But then once all those dollars are spent and the installations are in the ground, it's going to be the city of Rochester for those ongoing. So obviously we're at an early stage, but I think it's going to be really important to get a really good handle on those operational and long-term maintenance costs. Yeah. And I think the approach you're taking is you're on track.
Thank you.
And essentially we keep our full team, in design development working on those, because they've done it with so many public spaces, and they capture revenue through programming that then goes into funds for operations and maintenance. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Just want to kind of know the funding sources, just so we're all up front, but the level we have is that the state legislative approval of this, the state didn't have the funding to back their, or desire to back their bonds with the state's full faith and credit. So anytime we issue bonds, it's the city providing the backing for our share, and it's basically a one-year state appropriation that backs their bonds, which isn't the greatest strength given the history of legislation, but likely whether or not agreeing with each other and pursuing each other. So. the issue is going to be having the strength to back the bonds, and that's why I wouldn't put them up. We'll look at all options, but I doubt quality of
And here's the thing. There's two kinds of public bonds. There's the revenue bonds, which would be what you're talking about, but there's also the GA bonds. And I assume that this would have to be a GO based on exactly what you're saying.
No, we wouldn't issue a GO.
You wouldn't issue a GO. Okay.
That's the dilemma, because I don't think the city could put its GO at risk behind bonds. The state is only saying we got a 1-year risk.
Mr. Campion?
To that end, I think that's what, and maybe to Councilmember Wojcik's point, there's a interesting balance here. From our perspective, I think there's kind of dueling who's going to be responsible for setting the project priorities and who's going to be responsible for setting the budgets. So there's DMC allocation that has to be at play here. Certainly they're going to carry a significant amount of these projects forward with that DMC funding. The people who are most familiar with that funding ramp schedule, again, maybe the DMC, I know you guys are going to bring forward some ideas. What I'm looking for is a full understanding of the implications of funding a particular project at a particular rate and what that does to other projects that are being considered. And secondly, I look at this as an end result, and I'm a little bit contemplative if this could have been done differently and expedited the matter. When we get to the end and we see the price tag, and I think we all gulp and go, okay, we need to start figuring out how to phase it or what to take out or how is it going to work. I wonder if instead it would have been more effective to get a ballpark estimate up front and work forward from there. To me, I look at that number and I go, what's going to give here? Is there a pricing mistake? And I don't know. I'm sure there's not. Yeah. But I think instead we have some discussion to hold internally about, is this how going forward we want to do these kind of experiments? I think looking back, if we had been able to quickly tell us that our ideas were twice what our budget was or 25% over,
sure,
we should have been building that into the discussion much earlier. So I guess I would look to have the DMC board and probably the council get together on some agreement about what the allocations for these projects are going to be, so we're not skittering all over the place and trying to reevaluate at the end.
Mr. Woodruff?
One thing I would add to that, too, is the number is the total number, and the nice thing about this is other communities have been successful in drawing private philanthropy into some of the aspects of this project, and because it's carved out in that way, particularly the art pieces, of course, is a possibility.
Yep.
Mayo's quite good at this portion of it, so depending on how they want to participate, both as a private party and connecting philanthropists who would want a signature piece of art near the clinic, there's a ability to knock that number down substantially in terms of the public component as well.
There is benchmark, the bean at Millennium Park in Chicago was $23 million. Now that's a number that everybody in Chicago thought was insane. And no one goes to Chicago without going and getting their picture taken under the bean.
The bean is Chicago.
Well, I do, but
that's not if
you're normal people.
All right. Any other questions, Mr. Seib?
Yeah, just to conclude, I want to thank you for taking this time. As I said, you're seeing this real time. We just received this last week, so we haven't had the time, both from operations and capital, to fully vet it, but we wanted you to see it real time. A similar presentation will go before DMCC in July, so later this month. And I think to your point, Mr. Campion, there is a need sooner rather than later for both bodies to talk about what comes first in a whole range of priorities, and this being among them. So having this information now affords us a chance to make informed decisions, and I think they've done extraordinary work that meets our expectations in terms of delivering the work, and I think the kind of feedback and comments you gave us today will be very helpful.
Thanks.
All right. Appreciate
it.
Thank you.
Yes. Thank you, guys.
Yeah. Thank you. Any other business? Mr.
Campion. Mr. Reed, so on Twitter today, which I know some people are going to be chagrined at, I was asked about about recording of the cow. I thought that was in flight. What's the status of that?
We have a quote from our vendor. It's the same one that did our upgrades in the council chambers. It would be about $22,000, and this is as of a little bit ago, so I have to get an updated quote on that. That would give us on-table microphones. I think it's one set camera, possibly two, to make sure it's captured the screen. That will allow for recording, live streaming of it, and possibly, if we can work it out with Charter, the cable cast.
So last time we talked about keeping it here. If the council is set on a time and a spot, I would like to make that investment, and I would just was wondering what the temperature of the rest of the council is in regard to that, because I think one of the aspects of seating and availability, we have more accessibility if we're broadcasting for people to be able to get in, and not accessibility in all formats, but an ability to get access to the council's deliberations and process. And I've had some people reach out today about wish they could have been able to watch some of our discussion about the armory, things that people are really interested in. I think having that camera set up in here, we would get used to it very, very quickly. The conversations we have in here are important, and I would want to just see if I could get enough support for that to bring it forward to consider it in the next meeting.
Mr. Bilbeck?
And I think along with that, there's other groups that would be mm-hmm. beneficial too as well. I mean, planning, there are times that planning zoning cannot be in the council chambers because we are, you know, if that's something we want to do is get those type of meetings audio and video, then I think that makes a lot of sense, because I think this room would get a lot more use than just the council. I think other groups could also use it.
You know, I would agree that, you know, modern day conference room, they're set up for audio visual. I mean, we started by purchasing the screen, so I'd be willing to entertain looking at, but I'd want to look at a comprehensive proposal. I don't want to it's got to be as trouble-free as possible, because you're not necessarily going to have someone to troubleshoot on the fly. But I would support looking at something comprehensive for the room, both audio and visual. Mr. Hickey, then Mr. Woodgate.
I'm okay with just the audio. I mean, I think it serves the purpose. People want to catch up on what was said. I mean, just the cost difference, I don't think it's worth it.
It's not just the. I'm also in favor of proceeding. I suggest that we do that. I think the incremental cost having the video, that's where the world is these days. And for me, it's more about that live streaming as well, not just the audio versus video, but making sure we can live stream this. So if we end up with a packed house here, we can turn on the screen in the chambers and away we go.
So if we were going to look at a proposal, I'd want to see it, you know, segmented, broken down. Then we can decide this component, and maybe it's not worth the money.
I'm just looking at Mr. Reeves to see if he can. We have those quotes that are broken down by this. Can you just validate that and put the quotes in RCA so that we can act on it?
I can get an updated quote that will kind of show what all this. But I guess I'm confused by the breakdown. I mean, I think the quote is
the package.
Either you do it, or you kind of don't. I'm not sure it comes in pieces necessarily.
Sure.
It's all kind of tied together to allow it to be taped and then kind of live and then live streamed all together at the same time. Otherwise, I mean, I can ask them, is it the question that you'd like to see it to be able to be videotaped but just not live streamed, and we would replay it, we would try to attach and replay it later? Is that?
I think the live streaming is part of the package, so I agree with the comprehensive kind of let's do this once at one price point and go forward. But I would just say, let's see what the quote we had was, if you could send that to the council, and we could. If there are questions at the next COW, just prepare it for RCA would be my goal. And if there's questions and we want to pull the RCA or table it for more discussion, I'll be fully supportive of that. But let's see what we have out there and talk about bringing that forward. Because it is one of those things that we've talked about a few times, how we're going to put install in this room. And while I don't know what a comprehensive answer looks like, I'd be interested in seeing what that we got quoted, figuring out if that's going to meet what our kind of constituents are starting to expect in terms of access to the deliberation that takes place here.
All right. Anything else for this afternoon?
You'll be with putting it on the next cow then if we've got the
sure.
in place.
Sure, you can pull it together. Yeah. Mr. Wood?
Just wanted a little brief discussion about on Friday we're going to be doing the interviews of the three finalists for the city administrator position. And at some point we had talked about some sort of a public engagement piece. From what I hear from staff, that's no longer feasible with this round, but before we make a final decision, I would like there to be some sort of a public engagement piece, and I don't know where the council is on that, but I throw it out there as something I'd like to see.
I would disagree with that, just purely from a process standpoint. One part of how we mitigated that is we said on the front end, we would poll a number of groups and parties to get their input as we constructed the profile. We did that so that we got a sense of what the public was looking for groups in terms of skills and attributes and so forth.
You know, who determined that list, though? I mean, did it give general public the ability to express interest?
It was a pretty broad list.
Senator, a fairly broad list of people. I don't have the list here. So we're trying to get feedback on what kind of qualities are important.
So anyway, I think it's important, but we'll go with the majority of the will.
Now, I will say that once presumably an individual is selected, there should be, and as part of the onboarding process, there should certainly be some opportunities for, mm-hmm. call it meet and greets or whatever. But I think it would be difficult to engage the public too much in the process. Now, it's not a referendum. It's not a decision on the part of the community. I'm sorry. It's going to be a decision on the part of the council.
That's fair. I just want to say I value what the community thinks about this.
I don't disagree. I'm just saying logistically it would be pretty different, Mr. Mayor.
Another subject, if you're ready. I said another subject.
Oh,
okay. If you're ready.
Oh, I actually have. I have a question about this subject. If that's okay. When we interview the candidates. Those meetings are open to the public, though. Yes.
For us, yeah.
Okay, so...
For viewing only.
Okay, so then people can, the general public can send notes to their council members. Okay.
Absolutely.
Okay.
They can also be present.
And they, yeah, right, okay.
And I checked with staff and it's now listed on the website.
So the public is invited.
Okay, perfect. Because it was my understanding that it was the final person that the public was going to... talk to and be introduced to, but I could be wrong. That was very early in my council career, so I'd have to look back at that video. Okay, that answered my question. Thank you.
Mr. Campion?
Yeah, the final step of the process is still a little bit amorphous in my mind. So once the council selects a finalist or a final candidate, the next step is something I would like to understand from Linda what happens. And I was hoping she would be here, but I understand that we have staff all over the place. The next step, because I also thought that the public discussion point was that there was some meet and greet possibly before the final vote. But I think we need to just.
I don't think that was the plan.
And I would just say that that's what I understood as well. And if that's not the plan, it's not the plan. But that was what I had understood.
I just wanted clarity. So here's what I'm going to ask. Memo from Linda with clarity about that final step. That's, I think the council should get that.
Yeah, you certainly need that for your meeting on Friday.
I think, generally speaking, what would happen is, assuming we agree on an individual, is then it goes back to the recruiter, because then a negotiation happens, you know, contractual negotiation, that sort of thing. Before there's acceptance of the offer and things of that nature. Mr. Bilibeck?
We won't be making a decision on Friday.
No.
No, I don't think so.
All right, I was just wondering what that process is. Yeah.
I'll contact Will Sharon and Linda and have them draft up something.
Yeah, I wouldn't be prepared to decide.
Well, I would think that would be awful quick for us to have to make a decision, but I don't know what the lag time.
For everyone's sake, I think it's important we point out that the process is a little bit convoluted by the nature of it being an HR and a public process at the same time. So there's an effort here to synchronize all the stuff and make sure it's legal. So again, that's why we're referring to our HR department to make sure that they give us a memo about exactly what's going to happen and keeps our HR obligations alongside our obligations to the public, which we need all fully.
I was just going to add to it, and support for everyone to remember, there's four possible outcomes for the next step. Three of them is selecting one of the candidates, and fourth is to continue looking.
Okay. So we'll ask for some clarity from our recruiter individual to outline the final steps, hopefully. Mr. Mayor?
I had a call today from someone with the county that wants to have a candidate to be in the milking contest at the county fair later. And so any of you that are have a lot of frustration and want to get rid of it, maybe that'd be a good way. So if any of you want to volunteer, let me know, and I'll pass that.
Flynn's not representing the county again, is he?
We lost to Flynn last year.
No, no one can beat Flynn, so.
No, I know. I don't know.
Apparently, you didn't grow up on a farm.
Is it Ken Brown?
I think I just heard a volunteer.
Oh, I heard it.
I thought I heard her say she grew up on a farm. Yep.
She can't make votes here.
All right, here we go.
I think consensus says that.
Brady, not by consensus.
By consensus, Annalisa will be representing the
RCA at our next council meeting.
Pass the 6-1.
Won't the fair be done by then?
There you go.
Hamilton said that
so,
a cow meeting.
We'll let someone will let you know.
Yes. The cow.
The other thing is 5:30 today, there's a reception for Chancellor Hemkohl over at the tree. So any of you there, I need to be there. Our poet laureate wrote a very nice poem for him. She won't be there. We didn't make up the comments, but make sure you're there if you can.
Thank you.
All right.
Thanks, Anna.
All right.
I'm done.
Yeah.
When it, when
let
is,
me know when it is. I'd like to come
when
on.
When is it? I mean, I can milk a cow. I just
you know, you're not talking yourself down when you say something like that.
But I'm pretty sure.
We're behind you all the way.
I'm pretty sure my schedule is really full this next week. Actually,
hey, you know what? I can walk a dog better.
I don't even know what the fair is. What is the fair?
We have to do
more. Oh, shoot. I'm going to be in Oregon.
I'm an embassy. I'm a great
person.
In fact,
I'm Valley. What did you learn here today?
Shut up.
Nobody wanted that. Thanks for taking it off our plate.
No, I did not take it off.
You know, like, we have, like, you know, I think the alley to get out of the wind.
So I have a question. Like, maybe you can answer.
You know, the whole idea is to be dressed and we want to be something for people to come up with. Unfortunately, the nice fireworks gets in here for a couple of days, everybody straps on their
a lot of work to do, yeah.
Are you going to be in the milking contest?
So,
sounds like it.
I